Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the clock-watching voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
Hello, Richard.
Hello, clock-watching indeed. I've just had a little rant to you, haven't I?
Yeah, go on then. Go on, here's another one of your bright ideas to just plunder the game into the pit of preposterousness that it's already become.
Lots of P's, I like it. Look, no, we've just been talking off air. Lots happened again this weekend, of course, VAR and the controversy at West Brom, Brighton, which no doubt we'll touch on, and the goalkeeping performances, whatever. But for me, for all of the different developments they've made in the game of football, how can it be fair for one game, the ball to be in play for 45 minutes, and in the next game, the ball to be in play for 65 minutes? That's two completely different games. We're talking a percentage. One game has 50% more football than the previous game. How can that be fair? So we're worried about, was Hudson-Odoi, was it handball or not a handball? We're looking at these things in fine detail, and yet one game can have 20 minutes more football than the previous game. How has there not been a stopwatch implemented at this point? Like a game of basketball, you are guaranteed a certain number of minutes per game. The ball will be in play. It would stop time wasting instantly. It would stop feigning injury, etc., etc. And you would be guaranteed an amount of time of the ball being in play, which of course wouldn't be 90 minutes. That would be too much. But 60 minutes guaranteed football. For me, that makes sense.
Do you enjoy football?
Love it.
Did, before VAR came in and potentially ruined the entire top flight as we know it, did you enjoy football then? Did you like the cut and thrust of the game, the excitement, the passion, the enthusiasm?
Loved it.
Right, so why do you need to change it?
Well, no, we are changing it. That's the point. We're trying to make it fairer and fairer and fairer. That's what all this is about. All the money that is in the game. What are you laughing at?
Oh, the money.
What are you laughing at? It's true. This is what all these developments are about. It's trying to make it as fair as it can possibly be. Which, look, whether you agree with it or not, it is what it is. And the argument will always be there's so much money involved in the game of football that these decisions, being as important they are, they want to try and guarantee the majority are right. Now, whether you agree with that or not, that's up for debate. I think the element of uncertainty is something that we do love in football. So I'm not a massive fan of VAR, and I know most people aren't, I think it's fair to say. But if we are going down this track of trying to make it the most fair game, I still, for the life of me, cannot understand how one game can have more minutes of action than the previous.
I just don't know how you'd manage that one, because you're suggesting a stop clock, yes, right? So no stoppage time from now on. That's scrapped. So every time the ball goes out of play, the referee stops his watch.
Well, it wouldn't be the referee. That's the thing. You'd probably look at that level. You'd probably have somebody who is in charge.
Oh, here we go. So someone else that's employed.
There you go.
Getting someone
creating
else to,
jobs. That's what I do. Create jobs, Matthew. No, it might be somebody. Look, there's going to be a clock. There's a clock at most stadiums, I think. There's a TV at most stadiums. But there would be a clock that, yeah, look, they do it in basketball. It's not that difficult. They do it in the NBA. They do it in college games over there, from what I know. So, look, it's not that difficult to implement. I'm not going to go into the logistics as to how we're going to implement this stop clock, but I'm saying it's very easy to implement a stop clock in every league, not just in the Premier League, in the Championship, League One, League Two. It's a lot easier than implementing VAR all the way down, certainly.
But what you then have, like you have in NBA, of course, is the countdown towards the end of the game. Do you want that in football? Suddenly you got 10 seconds left on the clock and the fans are at 10, 9, and teams are running the attacks. Ridiculous. You can't have that. It'd be a circus.
I mean, I think we'd learn to love it. I do think we'd learn to love it in the countdown. But it would be that. There would be so much more skill involved, knowing that you've got, I know, ball's gone out of play, and you know there's 30 seconds left of action, like you see in the NBA. Now, they do love that in American sports, that it's like, obviously they call timeouts and whatever else over there. That'll be the next thing, won't it? They'll introduce timeouts. But you know, there's like 30 seconds left. Then, of course, there's a lot of strategy that then goes into it, because it's like, look, we've got one last play in order to score the points we need to score, and they'll then have whatever plays they do. There would be similar things that would then happen in football. In the last minute, how do you then, you'd be getting the ball back to front that much quicker. Of course, if you're the defending team, defending a lead, you'd have to be a little bit more intelligent in terms of how you're going to run the clock down. You can't lie there and pretend that you've got cramp or whatever else it would be. Or, you know, holding the ball up in the corners would work to an extent, but even that, the moment it goes out of play, it stops again. So you might actually be better off attacking sometimes. I just think it would change the game for the better.
Okay, that's fine, Richard. Another one of your ideas. I'm sure there will be many more to come.
I just wish they'd... So they just need to implement the penalty idea and the stop clock, and I think our game is complete.
Okay, moving on, Richard, because we have a jam-packed show again today. We've got some correspondence, which we're going to get onto in a minute. But first, Patron of the Week.
Yes, indeed. And this week, our patron of the week is a gentleman called Asmir Begovic.
Oh, my.
Yes, you might have heard of him.
I have.
Yes, he is our patron of the week, of course. Asmir, the goalkeeper of Bournemouth previously. Do you want to list off, reel off his clubs? I know you'll know every club, probably his under 12 club.
You've got a real issue with this, haven't you, at the moment, me going into the background of goalkeepers. Off the top of my head, Richard, as I'm sure many, most, even all of the listeners to this podcast would be able to do the same. What, Chelsea, Portsmouth, Carabag, Stoke, AC Milan.
AC Milan,
there we go.
That.
Many.
There you go.
Tottenham for a fleeting period, although never at Tottenham.
Well, there you go. Well, there you go. Well, anyway, he is our patron of the week. So a big thank you to him and to all of our lovely patrons. We do appreciate your support.
Okay, moving on to that correspondence, Richard. We had a WhatsApp in from a gent named Josh. Now, this is regarding the game between Sheffield United and Liverpool. So a bit of analysis before we actually get on to the analysis. And Josh says, "Hey guys, loving the podcast. As a Sunday league keeper, looking forward to the return. It's really handy listening to little tips and analysis from you guys. It's really helpful for the confidence."
Nice.
"I just watched Aaron Ramsdale's first half performance and I cannot believe Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank has put it all down to poor finishing. Ramsdale misses one of those and it's all on him. He saves them, he gets no credit. What does the lad have to do to get some praise? Thankfully, Roy Keane gave him a shout out, but the fact he saved that Trent shot from around 8 yards out, up the Ramsdale."
Absolutely. And I have to agree entirely. It's, yeah, look, and again, without banging the same drum, it's often about where the punditry is coming from. And Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank was a striker, of course. So naturally, he is going to look at the finishing and not necessarily. So I don't necessarily have too much of an issue with that because he is doing it from his perspective. But I fully agree with that message in that you can't just focus on that. You have to look at the other individuals that are involved in each of these plays. And Aaron Ramsdale, that first half, that's as good a first half that I think any goalkeeper's had this season, it's fair to say. And you could argue that maybe he didn't quite get the credit. Certainly, given that he's had enough stick this season, rightly or wrongly, and certainly earlier in the season, he was getting a lot. But no, I'm really happy for him that he's now getting quite a bit of positivity. Certainly, I see a lot of people on social media giving him a lot of positivity. And although Sheffield United are, well, effectively doomed, it looks like, certainly for him, he has now very much got his feet under the table there and has certainly found some good form.
Okay, thank you for that, Josh. If you want to get in touch with us, like Josh did, very easy to do so on Twitter at gkunionhello@goalkeepersunion.net or on our phone number 07503 673 020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Right, carrying on from where we left off. Sheffield United 0, Richard, Liverpool 2. Ramsdale with the brilliant first half performance that you've just mentioned. 5 very good saves of note. It wasn't to be come the end of the game, but some display.
It was indeed. I'll just make a note as well of Adrian, who did make a very good save. Took a bit of a deflection and never easy to step in for a goalkeeper. And of course, we wished Alisson best wishes in the last show. And once again, just to echo those sentiments, but for Adrian to step in and perform very solidly, I thought on the whole, and make a very good reaction save, given that it took a bit of a deflection, credit to him. But yeah, we do need to talk about Aaron Ramsdale, because I thought that his first half display was excellent. I thought decision-making, he showed the very best of Aaron Ramsdale for me. You know, we saw a lot of this, certainly last season, we have seen it at parts this season. But one of the big things for me is actually his body language. Like, he's looking like he's enjoying it more and more with each game. And I know we touched on it a lot earlier in the season where he looked quite pained at times, whereas now he does look like he's got a bit of a spring in his step. And the save from Trent Alexander in particular, I thought was superb. And I know that that was mentioned in the message that we received, but it really was a phenomenal save. You actually look at the way in which he's held his position. It's coming through bodies, and the way in which he's reacted so quickly to get hands to it and tip it over the bar. Phenomenal reaction, very powerful. Look, Aaron Ramsdale moves incredibly well. That's something that he's always done. He's very flexible, agile in how he plays. But that save in particular, I thought was fantastic. And then some of the spreads that he did, the blocks. He's got a certain technique when he does the spread, tends to go down to his left and creates a reasonably big barrier. I made a couple of excellent saves on the back of it.
Newcastle 1, Wolves 1. We thought it might come, Richard. And it did. Martin Dubravka replacing Carl Darlow. There was a suggestion he could have had a stronger hand for the goal scored by Ruben Neves. The co-commentator, I don't actually know who it was, obsessed with Dubravka's strong hand and suggested that had he been playing a few games prior to this one, he would have saved the header. I'm guessing because his arm or his hand would have been stronger. Who knows? He did, however, make a very good save near the end of the game from a Fabio Silva header.
He did. No, fantastic save towards the end of the game. How that stayed out, I've no idea. Kind of hit his shoulder. He was doing some kind of matrix action in the goal as this was going on. Hit the bar, went around the post. Phenomenal save to keep that out.
It didn't just hit him, did it? That he actually maneuvered his shoulder.
That was what, and I'd say the matrix action. If you watch it in slow motion, it's quite funny to watch, but it is. It's phenomenal what he's able to do because he knew he couldn't get his hand to it. So he has. He's moved his shoulder to it and it was perfect in the end, the way it's hit the bar. And I don't know how it's gone out for a corner. It's kind of gone round the post. Just, yeah, couldn't have done that. Could try to do that a million times. It won't happen again. So no, credit to him for that save. The thing I'd say, and you always find this as a goalkeeper when you've been out a while, to get yourself back into the swing of it can take a few games. And I just felt that there was a save he made at the near post in the first half where it just looked awkward. He got the job done, but just looked awkward. On the goal itself, and again, it's one of those where he is at full stretch. And the only thing I would say is the technique he's gone with, almost with his wrist to try and palm it out, whether it would have been easier to get a full hand to it and almost just try and claw it out. You aren't necessarily then in control of where it goes. You might not be able to get the purchase on it to get the parry wide of the post, but of course you can guarantee keeping it the right side of the line. You just felt with this, he's almost tried to get a strong parry wide of the post and didn't quite execute it, and it's ended up in the corner. But certainly it wasn't an easy situation by any means. I thought that his movement was fine prior, and I thought that he set reasonably well, but just wasn't able to produce the technique needed in order to keep it out.
The punditry on this, which we won't dwell on because I think we'll get more into the Darlow Dubravka debate again, but it was Jermaine Beckford and Dion Dublin who were in the studio, and they were having a bit of a laugh and a joke at goalkeepers' expense again, as we always seem to hear. Now, as I mentioned, the co-commentator said if a keeper gets a hand to it, he should save it. This was for the goal. That was echoed by Dion Dublin. It was then put to Jermaine Beckford. What do you think, Jermaine? I think every keeper should do better. Ha 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 ha. Everybody laughed. Such a funny comment. But they all sort of laughed and joked. But then on the save, they said it's the ugliest save you'll see, but he'll be happy about that. I'm surprised he didn't initially come out for the cross and punch it away. After the game, Steve Bruce said, when the goalkeeper looks at it, he'll think, could I have gone better?
Really?
Mm.
Okay, interesting. Well, look, there is an element of them and us. And by the way, Steve Bruce, some of the comments recently have just been ridiculous in regards to goalkeeping, which it just shows you, even a Premier League manager being so clueless when it comes to knowledge about goalkeeping. But it is what it is. And I think that's where, you know, Dubravka and Carl Darlow, I'm sure they'll be having their debates internally about bits and pieces on that. I know a lot of clubs do. You kind of tend to... But what's been said in the studio is what tends to happen. It does become a bit them and us. And look, maybe we're not helping in regards to that because this is solely for goalkeepers and goalkeeper coaches, which is only, you could argue, going to make that gap even bigger. Of course, our bigger intention is to help spread further knowledge and allow people to understand goalkeeping that little bit better. But it is moments like that when they have that laugh and a joke, in the same way that we might laugh and joke about outfield players and some of the things that they might do. And it's kind of frustrating because that is where, and how many times we've said it, it's a sport within a sport, but it is a sport that a lot of the outfield players, ex-outfield players, still don't fully understand. So yeah, look, if those are the comments, those are the comments. I don't necessarily agree with them. I guess I'll just have to agree to disagree.
On the Dubravka Darlow thing, the tweet put out by Newcastle prior to the game was quite remarkably short-sighted, really. Strange. A gif of Dubravka celebrating before the game. Yeah. So they put this out, they found out that he was being selected and uploaded a gif of Dubravka celebrating, which I thought was very strange. And then Steve Bruce was asked about it, not that, but why he'd chosen to bring Dubravka in before the game. He said, in management, sometimes you have to make a decision which is sometimes cruel. He's done so well, Carl, but I just feel the influence of Martin and his experience. Results haven't been great for us, so a change in goalkeeper. And as I said, I can't stress how good Carl has done for us. He's done nothing really wrong, but I decided to make a change and the experience and know-how of Martin could maybe help us.
Right, okay. Well, at first, in terms of the social media post, you're right. And a lot of people, I saw a lot of the comments underneath it, were like, how do you think that makes Cardallo feel, lads? Like, just unbelievable.
Because that's somebody, one of your players.
Yeah, one of your players internally. You just wonder who's heading up that social media department. And, you know, I guess I've got to be careful not to give Newcastle stick. Things do seem to be a little bit up in the air at the moment up there, I guess. So, I mean, do we give them the benefit of the doubt? Maybe. But, yeah, I'd be furious if I was Cardallo and I'd seen the lads that he probably sees every day, because they'll be working on site, probably at the training ground. And it's a bit, I'd be frustrated by that. And the comments from Steve Bruce. Look, yeah, of course, look, it's his prerogative to make the call that he thinks is the right call. And I'm not to say that it's the wrong call. What I would say now is that he's got to give Dubravka a run. So even if, say, he thinks he could have done better with the goal, which he obviously thinks he could, judging from a few of the interviews I've seen as well, he does now need to give Dubravka at least 5 games, I'd say, because you can't just make that call and then suddenly start flip-flopping the goalkeepers. It just doesn't work like that. Certainly if you want to get the best out of them. And I think for Dubravka, it's going to take him a few games to get back fully into the swing of things. It's been quite a while now since he was that regular first choice. So you're going to have that transitional period, which may be 2 or 3 games.
Chelsea 0, Manchester United 0, a goalless draw at Stamford Bridge. 2 big chances in the game, 1 at either end. Brilliant save from David De Gea to deny Hakim Ziyech, and a good save from Edouard Mondi to deny Scott McTominay.
Yeah, Mondi through bodies, did well to keep it out. I'll touch on the penalty appeal as well, in that I know he got a little bit of stick for this. I don't mind this too much. I think free kicks like that that are moving all over the place, I think you've got 2 options. I don't think you can catch it. I don't think that is an option. I think the 2 options are either the pat down, which if you've got that technique in the locker, I still think that's a great technique to have, where you can just take the sting out of it, drop it in front and look to make the save, the second save. Or the slightly safer option, which is what he went for, which is just to get firm hands on it and try and get distance. In the end, obviously, it leads to the penalty appeal, which then highlights the fact that he didn't catch it. And of course, a couple of people did ask whether he could have done a little bit better. Well, for me, as I say, I don't mind this. I prefer the pat down where possible, but I don't mind this technique. Ordinarily, you would get away with this, and arguably it is the safest thing to do in this situation. Again, keen to hear everyone else's thoughts on that, but that's my opinion on that. And then in terms of De Gea's save, yeah, I thought it was very good, because he's moving one way, had to be sharp in order to get his hand out. You know, the classic cliche of strong hand, but he did show strength in that moment with his arm, shoulder, hand in order to parry it and get good distance on the parry as well.
Lovely. Just a few more. West Brom 1, Brighton 0. I genuinely forgot the score of this game. Had to look it up again. I couldn't tell you what the result was because of the shambles that occurred. We won't dwell too much on that. Just 3 very quick things. Goalkeepers and hats. Your view on this, because Robert Sanchez was wearing a hat. West Brom scored. He then discarded the hat.
Yeah, I never ever wore a hat. And the reason being is that, don't get me wrong, it's frustrating when the sun is that bright. And I remember playing a couple of games. I always remember playing at the Valley, and that's one of the worst places for it. And I don't know whether it's the time of year or what, but the sun seemingly comes in on the corner of the ground, and it seems like it's so low. It comes all the way down, and it's blinding. But the problem is that, let's say you put a hat on. Look, it might help you to an extent, but at some point, someone shoots, you might move your head slightly, and you're going to get that sun in your face in that moment. If anything, or when a cross comes in, naturally you have to look up in order to see the cross. So the sun, if anything, just comes in at the worst possible moment. So it doesn't surprise me that he binned the hat, because I just think that you're almost better off at least having the sun there the whole time so you don't get that change. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get you. And peripherals as well, right?
Peripherals, sure. Yeah. It's all that. And I just think that, you know, you try and think back, and I did see an article about this, and they said it was in homage to our West Brom keeper, Chris Kirkland, back in the day, who was quite known, wasn't he? Kirky would wear a hat quite regularly. But for me, it was just that. It was the contrast from no sun to seeing the sun, and it being quite a blinding moment that happens. And seemingly it would always happen when you had a shot or when you came for a cross. So at the most crucial moments, when you ideally don't want to see the sun or you don't want that sudden impact. So for me, I just ditched it and just went with normally just putting my hand over my face or hand wherever the sun was. Frustrating, but at least then you were never caught off guard.
Funny you mentioned the Valley, because the only other goalkeeper I spotted in a hat this weekend.
Oh, go on. Oh, Ben Amos.
Ben Amos.
And right, that will be the case. I promise you, it's the worst ground for it. And I don't know why that is. But down that bottom end where you go into the changing rooms, I played a few games there, and every game, bright sunshine, blinded by the sun, so hard to play. So when you've got shots coming in from distance and it almost feels like the sun is behind the shot, you can barely pick it up. And it's something that doesn't get a lot of airtime and certainly people don't really talk about. But I promise you, it is one of the worst things when suddenly the sun hits your eyes and blinds you for that split second. You can be made to look very foolish.
The other 2 points from that game, Sam Johnston, 2 penalties that Brighton received. Sam Johnston, prior to those penalties, was clapping so loud. If you had the version of the game on that doesn't have the background noise, you could hear it rattling around the Hawthorns. Is it any coincidence that both penalties were missed?
I mean, look, you do whatever you can to put the opposing player off. And this is why I love penalty situations more than anything, because I think the psychology behind it fascinates me. And you try and think of the amount of things that could put a taker off. Of course, sound is one of the many tools that you have, and you are allowed to do that. So I would always say to a goalkeeper, clap your hands or do whatever you need to do. Even talk to the player. You know, I know goalkeepers that will be telling the player they're going to miss, and I know which side you'll go in, or all that kind of stuff. It's all part of the drama, all part of the fun of it. So look, was it the reason that they missed? No. Would it have had a slight impact, even a 1% impact? Quite possibly.
Okay, the VAR debacles, just quickly on this. The free kick itself, is it, because no one's really mentioned this from what I can gather, to be fair, I try to rid myself of any memory of what happened, but is it on the referee to wait for a goalkeeper to line up his wall?
The way that I always understood it, and I might be wrong here, so by all means do let me know if I am, but for me it was always the whistle. So I'd always be very wary that you're stood by the post, you're lining up your wall, but you are very much at the same time as lining up your wall, you have got half an eye on the referee or the person that's looking to take it. Because you can kind of tell if suddenly they start to run up, normally you've got just enough reaction time to sprint towards the middle of your goal again. So providing you can see, and you normally can through the wall, you can see the taker. If suddenly you see them start to charge towards the ball, you just ditch lining up the wall and you get yourself back into the center of the goal. Now, with this one in particular, we can't see how quickly Sam Johnston does react. But of course, that has happened, but the whistle hasn't gone. Or it went at about the same time. I mean, like you say, we're not going to go into detail on this. But for me, it was always a case of that. Right? I'm lining up the wall, but I'm very wary that someone might look to take a quick one. So if the referee does blow, then I've just got to ditch the wall and get yourself in the middle of the goal and at least give yourself half a chance of making the save.
Because it is not a rule, is it? And that's what's happened here. The referee's gone, oh, he's not in position. I need to blow again. Mm. It reminded me of back in the day when Man United played Leicester City. I don't know whether you remember this. Fabian Barthez was faffing around on the post. The ref hadn't noticed, blew the whistle. Muzzy, is it? Leicester had a penalty. Just hit the penalty down the middle without a goalkeeper in goal. And the ref went, oh, well, the goalkeeper wasn't there. So you've got to retake it.
Yeah.
Fabian Barthez, in all his gamesmanship, kind of chuckled, gave the ball back to Muzzy, is it? Then saved the next penalty.
Yeah, that does ring a bell. And that doesn't quite seem fair, especially if the whistle's gone. Then
it's not on the referee to ensure that the goalkeeper's ready, right? It should be the other way around.
Yeah, no, I'd go with that. I think the thing with this is that the whistle, I think, am I right in saying when they slowed it down, it was ever so slightly after the ball was kicked? But
no, I'm pretty sure the whistle,
we're going to get into it, and this we didn't want to. But no, you're right. I think that for me, it was, what I would say is that just from a goalkeeper's perspective, more from you guys listening out there, I would always say that while you're lining up the wall, just have half an eye. And I'm sure that Sam Johnston did, and I'm sure that he reacted as quickly as he could to get back. And in the end, it was a decent enough free kick to get it into the empty goal. Look, yeah, I don't really want to get into it too much because there's been enough said about it. I do think as well that normally what would happen is the whistle's blown, then they'd run up and kick it. Not a case of the whistle being blown at the point of impact. I mean, that's just bizarre. And I think, you know, through all the confusion, where I'll give Sam Johnston the credit is that ordinarily it's whistle. You've got a couple of seconds to get yourself back to where you need to be to then make the save.
Okay, moving on.
Yes, please.
Man City 2, West Ham 1. The first goal, the header scored by Ruben Diaz. We had a tweet in from Lincoln Jack who said, if I was Randolph, I would have backed up just a little bit for that cross. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's a fair point. It was an interesting one because I watched this so many times. My first question was, can he come for the cross? And I don't think he can, purely for the fact that the trajectory of the cross, it's quite a driven cross. It never really gets that high. So him not coming isn't an issue. The argument would therefore be, okay, can he get himself back to the line? Which in line with this tweet. Can he get himself back to the line, give himself maximum reaction time, and then maybe he's able to pull off a world-class save on the line? In the end, just by being the 2 or 3 yards off the line minimizes reaction time, and it made it a very, very difficult one to attempt to save. Look, if he goes back to the line, does it guarantee that he saves it? Absolutely not. It still might end up being a goal, but I just think that we're talking a yard, 2 yards, may have just given himself that split second longer.
Okay, and finally, Leeds 0, Aston Villa 1. Just one point I want to make on this game. Right at the death, Ian Melier coming up for a corner, straight on to Emi Martinez. Mm. It's rare that you see that, goalkeeper on goalkeeper, making a real point of it as well.
Yeah, it is rare. I mean, normally, again, it gives you the extra man in the box. Normally, and I only ever did it a couple of times when I came up, but you'd almost try and find that little pocket of space and hope the ball came to you. But yeah, he made a real point of going in on Emi Martinez. And I'm right in saying that Emi Martinez then came and claimed the cross,
yeah,
right?
Brilliant. Yeah,
which was fantastic. And again, by the way, another really solid performance from him. Wasn't taking his goal kicks at points, which might be one for us to keep an eye on. But look, once again, very, very good performance and an excellent win for Aston Villa.
Richard, I implore you.
Yes, it's my favourite time of the show. It's time for the Championship rundown. We start on Friday night, an entertaining 1-1 draw between Derby and Nottingham Forest. A couple of points of interest here. One regarding David Marshall, who conceded a goal that he'd be frustrated with. We both watched this a few times and can't help but feel that he wasn't done any favours by the bounce. The ball didn't seem to quite skip through in the way that you thought it would. Just died a bit on the pitch and squirmed under his hands and then went off injured a few minutes later. And then Kelleher-Roos came on, and in fairness to him, good performance from Kelleher-Roos. Did have a moment early on where the ball's just bounced off him. How often we see that when a sub-goalkeeper comes on and then has to deal with a shot and thankfully was able to get onto the rebound. So credit to him, but we'll see how that one plays out. Moving on to Saturday. Big win for Bournemouth against Watford. Good save from Asmir Begovic with his legs at 0-0 in this one. And Daniel Backman made a couple of excellent saves, it has to be said. One in particular, top-hand save, diving high to his left. And then another good save later on in this one, although he might be a little bit frustrated with the goal. Long through ball, and I've watched this a few times as well. Couldn't decide whether he might have been able to come for the initial ball. The more I've watched it, I don't think he can, given that it always seemingly was in control, or under control, sorry, by the Bournemouth player. But the shot itself just crept in low, and I don't think that Dan Juma actually meant to do what he did, but it was one of those where I just wonder whether Daniel Backman was predicting that it was going to come across him to his left-hand side. Body weight wasn't quite where it needed to be, and it just beat him down low to his right. So a bit of a frustrating one for him there, but generally another positive performance from Daniel Backman. Barnsley winning 2-1 against Millwall. Birmingham 2, QPR 1. Blackburn 1, Coventry 1. Once again, Ben Wilson in goal for Coventry. Brentford 2, Stoke 1. An interesting afternoon for David Raya. Caught out playing from the back. Looked to play to his left back. Didn't quite happen. Went out then to close the angle. Wasn't able to do so. Stoke scored. But Brentford came back with 2 goals. 2 very good goals, has to be said. And actually a very important save from David Raya later on in this game as well. Luton ran out 3-2 winners over Sheffield Wednesday. Yes, again, another situation of playing out from the back. Simon Sluger, this time the man who was playing out. Middlesbrough 1, Cardiff 1, Preston 3, Huddersfield 0. A couple of points of note in this game. Another excellent save from Daniel Everson, top right hand as he dived to his left. And a really spawny goal in this one. I felt sorry for Ryan Schofield. Made a very good save. Ball then broke, struck towards goal, man on the line, wasn't quite able to clear. It was a horrible moment as it's kind of squirmed under his boot and gone into the corner of the goal. Rotherham 0, Reading 1, good clean sheet for Rafael Cabral, and Swansea 1, Bristol City 3, arguably the performance of the weekend from Mr. Daniel Bentley, making a couple of phenomenal saves. No doubt we'll touch on them very shortly. Freddie Woodman got beaten directly from a corner. It was a fantastic corner, it has to be said, and it sailed over his head into the far top corner. Not sure there's a lot he could have done with it, to be honest, although it was from a corner again. I'm sure we'll touch on that shortly too.
Very good, Richard. Some suspect punditry commentary this weekend, to be fair. Not the first time we've said that, but Dan Mason on the EFL highlights on Quest for David Raya started the review of their game with Stoke, Brentford's game with Stoke, by saying, "It's the curse of the modern age, goalkeepers who think they can play." And then after he'd shown the goal, he said, "Stick to what you're good at, David, keeping them out."
Right, okay, fantastic.
Thought you'd like that one.
Yeah,
Dan Bentley, though, some very, very good saves. A save from Jamal Lowe in the first half, a tip over, then the spread to deny Jan Danda, and then the sort of shrug, push up and parry to keep out Conor Hourihan's header.
Yeah, had a real variety of saves in this one, and you could argue the scoreline maybe didn't quite reflect what happened on the day itself, but Bristol City, another big win for them. The one in particular I want to touch on was the tip over the bar, and I say tip over the bar, it doesn't do it justice at all. The speed of movement, reaction, how he got this, I'll never know, but superb save, and he really is building a very good season.
He is, and there was one game, Richard, that you didn't mention. I know. First time ever.
I know, and it's now that, as soon as I finished, I realised, and I actually watched this game live as well on TV, and the brilliant save from David Stockdale in this one, top hand. The agility that he showed to move to his left, dive, top right hand, and it was going right in the top corner. Excellent, excellent save. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough. Clean sheet for Tim Krul, nice win for Norwich, and they move on nicely.
Okay, best of the rest in the EFL.
Let's do it.
Portsmouth and Gillingham shared the spoils at Fratton Park. At one end, Jack Bonham made a good save down to his left from Harvey Wyke, and at the other, Craig McGillivray with another good stop to keep out Ollie Lee.
Yeah, a couple of very good goalkeeping performances here, and certainly Jack Bonham down to his left and down to his right in the second half. Very good save, and a big result this for Gillingham, going to Portsmouth and getting a draw. And as you mentioned, Craig McGillivray with one or two stops as well. Really entertaining game this was.
It was indeed. Nathan Baxter bouncing back with a big save to stop Josh Morris from the spot as Accrington held out for a draw at Fleetwood. Andrew Fisher getting away with one in MK Dons' draw with Oxford.
Yeah, a pass back towards him, which was a poor pass back, it's fair to say. So you're left with one of those decisions. Do you come? Do you stay? He decided to come and tried to tackle the player, and the player got there just before him and nicked it round him and would have had an empty goal to pass it into. So it looked like it was going to be a red card. Thankfully for him, it was only yellow. And then, as always the way, he then makes a very good save from the free kick down to his left. But Oxford weren't to be denied. They did get a last gasp equaliser.
They did. He made a good save from a header in that game as well, didn't he? And that last gasp equaliser was in the 97th minute. 97th minute was a big deal this weekend in League One. Two 97th minute equalisers. And at the Memorial Stadium, Rich, a 97th minute substitution. He's back. The boy is back. Jordi van Stappershoff on for Joe Day to steal the show in Bristol Rovers' win over Shrewsbury.
Is it Rovers' or Rovers?
Bristol Rovers.
But yeah, I knew you just wanted to get his name in somehow. The amount of times you've mentioned his name. Did he steal the show? Was it a fantastic save?
Well, he did pat away a Dave Edwards header, didn't he? Okay. From the resultant corner. It was the last kick, literally the last kick or head or pat of the game. And it was great because all the players then rallied around him. Nice. And lovely scenes.
Fantastic. Pleased for him.
Yes, pleased for Jordi. Back in the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks.
There you go.
And finally, in League One, yet more drama in the revolving door that is the County Ground goalkeeping department. Jojo Wallacott, unfortunately, injured in the warm-up in this one, wasn't he? Upstepped 19-year-old Archie Matthews. He knew just half an hour before the game. Now, we've got another WhatsApp here. This is from the same gent who sent us a message last week regarding Swindon. A note to say that we're not going to, you know, follow up on Swindon's goalkeepers in every single episode, but thought it was worth mentioning because Paul Wynn from Utah did say that it was Archie Matthews' first senior game, and some fans were moaning that he should have saved the first goal. Through bodies and skips off turf in front of him. Very difficult for a kid.
Yeah, look, firstly, huge credit to him because you're stepping in for a proverbial six-pointer, of course, playing Northampton, who are now bottom of the league after the result. But there was only 2 points separating the two teams prior to kickoff. So to step in for your debut in a game of such magnitude and to come through with a win, I mean, very few keepers get a win on their debut, first and foremost. You know, I certainly didn't. And I know a lot of goalkeepers that I speak to, it's quite a lot of pressure to come in for any game, let alone a game of this size. And credit to him. I thought he did very, very well. Of course, you're going to have those bits and pieces, the nerves that you might feel for your first game. And I agree fully with that message that's come in, because I think that it's one that he'll look back on and think maybe on another day he can get a stronger hand to it. But at the same time, it's a very difficult one. It is coming through bodies. It is going quickly. It's down to his left. He's at full stretch. So I certainly wouldn't say it's a bad error or anything like that. I think it's just one of them that maybe on another day keeps it out. And if he does, it's a phenomenal save. And then to play the rest of the game he did and was generally very clean in what he did, huge credit to him, a massive moment for him. Been at Swindon for many years, so delighted for him.
And in League Two, Scott Brown, quick reactions to thwart Liam O'Neill. That was a very good save up at Port Vale as they eventually lost to Cambridge United. Great winner in that one. Wow.
Ridiculous.
No goalkeeper is saving that, I think, is what the pundits would say.
That's the cliche. You could have any goalkeeper in the world or maybe three goalkeepers in goal. They still don't save that.
No chance for the goalkeeper. No chance. He's at full stretch. No chance. Josh Griffiths, a first half save from Davern Green and a free kick from Kevin Van Veen as well in Cheltenham's win at Scunthorpe.
Yeah, great performance. He's building a really good season, it's fair to say, and they are right up there, there or thereabouts, certainly. And he's been a big part of that. I think he's only recently just turned 19 years old, so certainly one to keep an eye on.
And from one debutant in Archie Matthews to another, Richard Harry Seedon at Southend, in for Mark Oxley, who is out injured for a period of time. I think around 4 weeks. They're saying 2 to 4 weeks of Seedon might get a run in the team, and he made a very good second half save from a point blank Ian Henderson volley.
Yeah, he did. Big moment, important point for them indeed, and certainly he'll take a lot of confidence from this. Huge credit to him. I know he's one that's highly rated. I know he's had England recognition as well in the younger age group. So again, another one to keep an eye on.
And finally, they didn't win the game, but Jake Eastwood on loan at Grimsby from Sheffield United, an excellent save from a Josh March volley over at Harrogate.
Indeed, yeah. I see he's made a couple of the Team of the Weeks this week, so well done to him. And it was. He was a very busy goalkeeper in this one. Could have been a lot more had it not been for him. But certainly the save up to his left we'll touch on and highlight, because it was a very good save. Dealt with the initial ball, got himself back, gave himself some reaction time, and then good athleticism to get to his left and parry it round the post.
Team of the Weeks or Teams of the Week?
Well, what ends up happening is a lot of different publications give a Team of the Week. So you can't definitively say they've made Team of the Week, but he did make more than one this week.
Okay, before we go,
yes,
a commentary corner.
Oh, right at the end.
Commentary corner. So we thought we'd just chuck this in because I couldn't believe what I was hearing yet again. Gillette Soccer Saturday. It was Jackie Oatley at the game between Peterborough and Wigan Athletic. Now, Asgard of Wigan floated in a corner beyond the reach of Peterborough goalkeeper Christy Pym. And Thalo Asgard, she said, whipped it in, perhaps on purpose, bearing in mind as good a goalkeeper Christy Pym is, he's a little short on the inches side. Wow.
Incredible. Incredible. Do you know what? Christy Pym as well. I want to say he's 6 foot. Like, it's not like he's 5'3", 5'2". It's not like we've got some very, very small goalkeeper in goal. Like, he is about 6 foot. So I'm sure if he's heard that back, he will be a little bit frustrated by that. Because I would argue that 6 foot... Look, I know you know my thoughts in that I think that 6'1 to 6'3 is arguably your optimum height. Now, look, if you're 6'4, 6'5 and you've got incredible agility, power, your Ben Foster type movements, etc., then yeah, of course, that's a great height to be. But I certainly think being 6 foot, no issue with that. Even if you're 5'11, no real issue with that. So yeah, to hear that, I'm sure he would have been a little bit frustrated.
Regardless of her views on goalkeeping, the world that we live in now, right? Is it okay to say something like that? Can you say that?
I don't even know.
Short on the inches side? I mean, all the gags came in after that, didn't they? That he was a bit short on the inches side.
Yeah. Did they? I didn't check social media. It's probably a good job I didn't.
Richard, you've got to go.
I do. Busy day today, I'm afraid, Matthew.
Places to be, people to see.
There you go. Something like that.
Well, there will be plenty more coming up on Thursday. Clean Sheet Club will return. Some Keepy Capers and some Rate My Saves too.
Fantastic. Cannot wait.
Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.